Good evening.
Good evening.
Great to see everyone. Great to be here. Not just now, to be here as we have been. Earlier today, I was sitting in one of the rocking chairs, waiting for the walking meditation line to wind its way back in, then to come and join, and it was at a moment where part of the line was coming down the porch, the other line was still going up the sidewalk, and then they wove together, all the bodies. And at that time, the wind was blowing and weaving through the pines, and it was just this great weave and this tapestry, and I just, it just came out of me, how wonderful, yeah. So glad to be part of the weave as well, and to do some weaving with you, and be woven with you together. And to be hanging out with this koan, doing weaving and being woven with it, and bring forth, well, what's showing up for me tonight? What came up for me, it's been a while since this koan and I first met individually and also in a group setting, and there's a familiarity that comes when that happens, and maybe some things I can take for granted because I've known it for a while, but then new things show up here and there every time we meet, yeah. And what's commonly come up with this, and that's been coming up now, is that the heart of the one who asks is Zen. Right there, the emphasis, the heart of the one who asks, kind of the pointing towards that as we've been doing, as we've been hearing and doing individually and walking with. The emphasis again on the heart of the one who asks. Well, a few years ago, we were taking up the koan together, and then someone brought in something I had never heard or even considered. I don't know if it's because I was conditioned to see it the other way or what it was, but the emphasis switched for that person. It became the heart of the one who asks is Zen. That was the takeaway. Like this, as long as you ask questions, that's it. And I thought, well, yeah, but no. And no. It's like it didn't quite sit right because it felt too much like a recipe, like a direct instruction. It was too set and fixed. Whereas the heart, that's wild and untamable at times and unpredictable and alive. Whereas if I just ask questions, that's Zen. I was like, So I was glad to encounter that because I was like, I don't want to go there. I noticed back then, I was like, oh, wow, it was really a strong response to that. And it's like, wow, how interesting that could be something that was taken away from it. Yeah. And over time, I forgot exactly how the person came to that place and what they emphasized, but I noticed I still wanted to avoid going there. So my mind, in order to help me not go there, translated the response to the heart of the one who is asking is Zen. So it would remind me, we're talking about the heart of the person who is asking. We're not talking about the act of the asking. So my mind did that move where it fixed it. It kind of settled the matter to let me avoid that, like I've been saying, yeah. So when that memory came back, meeting the koan this time around, it coupled with a tendency that's developed for me that was maybe more intentional, that has now become just kind of a natural thing that I do, is when I find myself resisting something, or in this case, kind of settling it so I don't have to pick it up again, and I kind of like, oh, don't want to go there, that's a good indication that I should probably lean into it. That I should turn toward it and go in the opposite direction than I think is helpful and find out, well, what's that about? So that's what I've been doing, as well as hanging out with the heart I've been hanging out with, well, what if it's true? Asking question. What if that is something I can say, okay, what if that's beneficial advice? So I've leaned in that direction. I still am. And so I've been hanging out. What does it mean to be one who asks? Yeah? What does it mean to have questions or to question? And I've come up with two basic flavors, and these are not exclusive. They're just general. And I'd want to invite you to explore this for yourself as you wish and find out what flavors you find with asking, with questioning. But the two that came to mind, well, the first was like a pointed question. Something that's coming from a place that's a little solid and it's wanting something, it's pointing at something, sometimes it's reaching for something, it's a pointed question. Give me this. How do I get that? And it's based on a knowing or an assumption or something like that. So it's kind of got that already a tight quality, a pointed question. Pointy question. And then there's just the questioning itself, being a question, being in that place of curiosity and wonder, uncertainty, not knowing, and not really reaching out for something specifically or coming from a specific place, but just kind of being in that place of inquiry, the warm curiosity that we speak of often, you know, when we meet something or something comes to meet us, can we meet it with that warm curiosity, lean into it? Maybe rather than trying to get an answer or get something directly, it's about having a conversation, enter into a dialogue, enter into a relationship in a different way than a pointed question does. So I favor the latter, yeah. But I noticed that doesn't mean that first doesn't have value, the pointy or pointed question. The way I find the pointed question has the most value for me is if I recognize I'm asking a pointed question. What happens is the point comes back to me. It points back around and lets me know, oh, look where I'm coming from. I'm coming from a place of having an assumption about something that I want confirmed, or I'm coming from a place that I think I need something and it can be gotten out there. And so that's helpful, to ask the pointed question, because it turns back towards me and points to me again and reveals, oh, this is where I'm coming from. And then I can turn the other questioning to that place I'm coming from and be curious about that. And so they partner. It's not about choosing one or the other, but letting the pointed and the open and broad field of questioning itself commingle and interpenetrate with one another. Yeah. So I've been, you know, considering that, the value of both types of questions and questioning. One, again, feels more like a field that holds a lot, and the other perhaps exists within that field, arises from within it, or maybe comes from someplace else and lands in it, you know, a variety of things those pointed and pointy questions can do, yeah. So I've been hanging out with that and going more deeply into the field aspect than the pointy one, because the pointy ones come up all the time. I can do that. It's a self-generating machine here with all those. So they'll take care of themselves, yeah. But that field, I've been curious, you know, what is that? What is it to rest there, to be there, or to allow it to arise and hold things the way it wishes to hold them? So I've just come to calling it the field of not knowing. Another thing, familiar term in the Zen world, not knowing is most intimate. And it's the not knowing that is not the based on not knowing, don't care, shrugging our shoulders, giving up, the one that's called blankness. Not knowing like that is just, it's not interested It's just, I don't know. That's not the kind of not knowing we're speaking of. It's that warm, curious, engaged, uncertain, wanting to find out, not knowing. Yeah. So that's the kind of, I'll be using that term, the field of not knowing. That's the kind I'm talking about here. And I've been bringing that to the koan and seeing how it's present in it, how it grows and develops and accompanies the koan, or is in the koan as the koan itself, as well as the other side of heart, the not two of the two. And what I've noticed is the poems written by Mujaku kind of demonstrate this relationship, this connection with not knowing in that field, and the development and growth of it through the course of the koan. So that was interesting to notice and to play with. So here's what I've been playing with to bring for you to, well, entertain as you wish, yeah? So the first poem, "The bucket catches the stream, and the pure moon behind pines appears in the water." Yeah. This comes after the moment where she's had a flash of realization, something's happened, and then she goes, and according to the koan, she just goes directly to the stream. Not sure what, you know, if this is the condensed version or if that's what happened, but I'll take it as that. She just left, went down there, found the stream, came back with this realization and this poem to express it, to present it to the teacher. And to me, that's the first, that it's the move of taking it to the teacher that helps generate the field of not knowing, initially. Actually, it was maybe sparked off when she came with a pointed question first. What is Zen? Yeah. Wanting maybe a response and got the point given back to her. You know, your heart is it. Maybe that sparked this, and then they had their dialogue, which leads to this realization. Then she comes with, okay, here's my presentation of the realization. But I think, to me, it's the point that she brings it to the teacher that's important. Because otherwise, she gets to control the narrative. She gets to have the meaning. She can say, this is my realization, and I've got it in this poem, and if I don't share it, then I can hold on to that story. Yeah. So I recognize that in my own life, yeah. maybe you do too. And I'm wondering, you know, she'd been a nun, we don't know for how long, but she was probably used to this. You come to the teacher, you present something, and things go back and forth. So perhaps she had done this with other teachers and knew the routine. But there's something about, well, this particular poem made the story, so there's something about it, there's something significant about the fact that it's there in her story. So maybe that was something for her in her life, like, oh, okay, he just gave me advice, and now I've got this realization, I'm going to give it back to him and show him I get it. And that's risky. Because she probably knows that there's likely to be, Or it could be, yes, you do have it, and you don't really know. And she enters into that not knowing, by, again, giving up control of the narrative and the story and holding the meaning to herself. Now, I'm thinking of a time in my life some time ago where stuff had been going on, weird stuff, unusual stuff, interesting stuff, and I was like, I don't know if this is just weird and a passing thing, or I don't know if there's something wrong with me. What's going on here? It seems odd. Or maybe there's something significant here. Maybe there's something to this. I don't know. But I did know I was reluctant to talk to anybody about it. Because any or all of the above could be confirmed or denied. And then I don't know what I would do. At least that place where I had the story and I had the meaning I assigned to it. Or didn't assign to it. But I kept it to myself, because that helped me keep control of it. Yeah? there's the fear of being told, yeah, you're weird. Yeah, there is something maybe wrong here. Or the fear of, no, that's not really that special. That's normal. That's usual. And then that's, I don't get to have that anymore. I have to let go of that. Oh, But eventually, I did bring it forward. And it was, to my teachers. That kind of thing. And no clarity at all was given. There was not a yes or a no. There was just a huh. Okay, yeah. And that was really enough. Because now I no longer had to be the only one carrying it. And the only one holding it, looking at it, and maybe curious about it. And that releases the pressure of knowing that it's something or knowing that it's not something. It's like we can not know together. We can look at it together. Carry it that way. So I think that's the kind of move that happens with Mujaku here. Maybe she's like, this is it. And that answer I've been looking for came, and now this is the realization that will sustain me for the rest of my life, and I can just hold on to it and keep it. And then we don't really know anything that Buko says other than take the Heart Sutra and go. Yeah? That might have felt great. It's, we weren't there. We don't know how he said it. Like, oh, take the Heart Sutra and go. Yeah? That might have been like, yeah, confirmation. Or maybe take the Heart Sutra and go. Huh. But I'm imagining myself as Mujaku walking away going, okay, great. Wait a minute. Is this punishment? Is this like remedial? Hey, the Heart Sutra, this is like the core teaching. Take this, if you think that, Or is this like, hey, celebration. You should take the Heart Sutra and let them reside together and live with one another. I don't know. Confirmation? Denial? Punishment? So that field of, I'm not really sure what this is, starts to generate for me and becomes less important trying to figure out, well, what is it? Trying to affirm or deny or settle it, yeah? It's like, oh, let me just take the Heart Sutra and go and see. And as we know in the story, she keeps going and coming and going and coming, and lots of exchanges go on, right? So then we have the next poem that makes the story, so it must be a significant moment. We don't know if she had other poems she wrote in the meantime that might have just been, Yeah? Because they didn't make the story. This one comes in, and I think it's the next phase of that field of not knowing becoming something different. And that's the poem that about the bottom falling out. Yeah, the bottom fell out of my bucket. Now there's no water. No moon. When I put myself in that place of writing that poem after having written the other one and gone on the journey that I went with this in my story, what comes up is, like, I'm really confused and puzzled and curious because the words I want to fill in after this poem are, and yet that thing that the other poem was talking about is still here. And I thought it depended upon the water being caught in the bucket and reflecting the moon. That's why I wrote the first poem. But now, there's no bucket. There's no water, there's no moon, but that is still here. That sense of something is still here. Whoa. That's weird and wonderful and mysterious. And so I take it to my teacher not to try to get confirmation or check it out and, get yes, no kind of thing. It's more of, hey, look at this. What do you think? Let's look at it together. What started with the other poem was kind of this, let's start looking at things together, not trying to have me answer for you or me meet the expectations I set up for myself. What if we just look at it together? Yeah. So she brings it to Buko, and we don't really know his response. We don't have that in the story. And which is great, because maybe that's it. There's not really a response you can give to sum this up. It's maybe just, you notice that too. You notice that feeling. I see it. Oh, we don't really know. We can make up that conversation. We can imagine. We can be Buko, be Mujaku, enter into that space together. But that joining together in that field of not knowing, the shared field, where nothing's being sought, but meeting what's arising and companioning while it's arising, being there together, that's what's there, yeah. But we do know, as Sarah mentioned the other day, Mujaku became a Dharma heir and taught for many years, lived into her 70s. So this is the last story we have the last poem we have in the story. The next thing we hear about is something that happened after she died. But I can imagine that it wasn't the end to that field of not knowing, growing and expanding, that it accompanied her and deepened, and she deepened in it. She deepened as it, yeah? Became that field. Simultaneously in it and of it and it. And it grew and companioned her as she companioned others, and they joined it, and things wove together so that years and years later, other people are taking up her story and joining her in that same place, that same not knowing, yeah. Which brings us to the third poem from the Nun Nyozen. The bottom fell out of that bucket, that humble woman's bucket. The pale dawn moon caught in rain puddles. So this one's even weirder than the second one, because no longer Mujaku. She's not here, there's no bucket, no Mujaku, yet very much Mujaku here. Yeah, accompanying, present in that field with Nyozen. And then we have the water in the rain puddles, yeah. Definitely not the exact same water that was in that bucket, but not the water that was in that bucket, yeah. Out here. Spread in all these puddles. And not just one bucket now, puddle, puddle, puddle. And here's a little barely filled puddle with just little bits of light in it. And here's one that's deep and rippling. You can see the moon dancing in it. And here's one that somebody just stepped in, so it's shimmered and spread apart. Now it's coming back together, that moon. Yeah. Then, officially, it's the same moon reflected in that puddle. But not the same moon, because it's there for Nyozen to see, looking into, to see it reflected. And then if there's puddles, there's this moon and this moon and this moon and this moon. How many moons? One moon? Who does it belong to? Whose realization was this? These other poems? Where is and isn't Mujaku? Yeah. And I'd say that thing that was in the field, in the first poem and the second poem, is now still present here for Nyozen in this third poem, written well after the fact. But that which is just right there, still woven. And that's where it's mysterious, because whose was it? Who does it belong to? Yeah? And does deciding that help? To say, well, this was Mujaku's and it inspired me, and to divide it up like that, does that help? To try to push it away? Or does it help to say, it's all mine, and do that? I think what helps for me is to not try to resolve it, to let it all lie there together. Mysterious. Yeah. being with the heart of that, the heart of what is, in that field of unknowing, not knowing. Yeah. And so this is really something I think we can find ourselves doing in our lives. Yeah. And not happening linearly like it is presented here in this poem and appears to have happened from Ajapu, but stories like to be passed down in ways that make sense to us linearly and stuff, but we don't know how it really happened, how she swirled around and got to this point. But I think what I can recognize in my life, and maybe you can resonate with, is how this not knowing, this field of not knowing, can really be with you at all times, and be of you, and be you at all times. And the way I see it, the different relationships here I see between that field and each poem is what each poem represents, you know, for me. So the first poem about catching the bucket of water and the moon in that water is not knowing surrounding presence, surrounding what is. When something's present, it's here, it's alive. It doesn't necessarily have to be a beautiful thing like a moon reflected in a bucket. But whatever it is, when it's present, what is it like to have not knowing and that field rest there with it and hold it and let it inform it? So the presence, or it might be knowing, not knowing accompanying knowing. It seems to soften the edges for me. Allows me to be uncertain. Or as the old greeting from the old days in our tradition, I am not certain. Yeah. I really love that. For those who haven't heard, and for those who have, with a refresher, it's said that back in the days, in the days in China, those who practiced the way, when they came together and met, maybe having been gone for a long time, been apart, the greeting that they offered was something akin to, I am not certain. I am not certain. I am not certain. Oh, good. So how you been? Yeah? So what's your life like? Tell me what's been going on. Tell me what's been present for you. Yeah. So that's that kind of not knowing, holding what is. It's like, well, this is what's been going on. But I'm not certain that it means anything or doesn't mean anything. But it's here. And I can hold it, not deny it, hold it loosely. Yeah, and let it be. It's like people, it's happening less and less, but sometimes people will sit down and kind of genuinely and sincerely say, so how are you doing? Or how have you been? That's what they say. How have you been? And I stop and I go, I haven't been paying attention. I've not actually been trying to figure out how I've been or how I'm doing. I'm not keeping tabs. And that's interesting because I know stuff has been happening, but I don't have any sense. So in the presence of things happening, I'm not really trying to evaluate and gauge how have I been or how am I now. So then I just say, I don't see any indication of disaster. And I have nothing that indicates I should be concerned. So I think I'm all right. And I'm sure, like, okay, it was just a question. But I just noticed that arises for me, that I actually look, it's like, I don't know how I am. Things seem to be fine, yeah. So anyway, the first, again, the field of not knowing accompanying presence, what is. So then we have the next poem with no bucket. The bottom fell out. So no water, no moon. So not knowing in the accompanying absence, when we have nothing, or when what we had is no longer there. That thing we thought we needed, could rely upon, needed to rely upon to get through. That what we thought was essential. when it's gone, and we can't find our footing. It's out of our grasp. We can't find anything. We reach, and it's just, there's absence. There's nothing. We can rest in that field of not knowing as well. Yeah. Not knowing that this is a problem. Not knowing that it's not a problem. Just being able to be more with what isn't. So being with what is versus being with what isn't. Letting that field of not knowing accompany that as well. That's the thing about that field of not knowing, is it doesn't care. It doesn't care what's in there or not in there. It's accommodating, wide, spacious, vast. But maybe something we can know in that place of not knowing and absence is that we don't need to reach for something to fill that space. The not knowing can hold us, and we can be in that place and realize maybe absence has something to offer just like presence does. Yeah. It's just another shape of the same thing. So that not knowing in that place, for me, can be a calming ocean to sink into, rest upon, be comforted by, to be still with, yeah. Don't need to immediately do something about this, necessarily. Then the last poem, to me, is the mystery. So the field of not knowing accompanying the mystery or the mysterious, where we're not sure what's what. There are no clear lines defining whose is whose and when is when and good or bad. It's just that deep mystery that can be unsettling if we're reaching for, wanting to settle, wanting to have clear lines, but accompanied by that field of not knowing turned into, wow, whoa, how mysterious, yeah? Going back to, I don't need to resolve this. I can hold it. I can be as spacious as that field and hold it, not resolve it. So in the first, with presence, there's no reason to hold on to that too tightly in that field of not knowing. And with absence, there's no need to reach for something to fill that absence. And in the mystery, there's no need to resolve what we think we need to resolve. We can just let it be. Fall out there, be what it is. Yeah. And follow it. And see where it turns and rolls and how it unfolds. In the dark, darken further. Yeah.